a member of the Beasley Broadcast Group. This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
Opinions expressed during the following paid program are those of the program producers and do not reflect the views of WRCA Radio, its staff, or management.
Greetings, gang. It's time for Tube Talk.
But it's funny now and then how my thoughts go drifting back again to my old flame. My old flame. My new lover's arms seem so tame. For there never was a gem more magnificent or elegant than my old flame. I've met so many who have fascinating ways, a fascinating gaze in their eyes. Some that took me up to the sky, but their attempts at love were only imitations of my flame. Just can't think of his name, but I'll never be the same until I discover what became of my old flame. My old flame. Funny now and then, how my thoughts go drifting back again to my old flame. My old flame. My new lover's arms seem so tame. Well, there never was a gem more magnificent or elegant than my old flame. I met so many who had fascinating ways, a fascinating gaze in their eyes. Some that took me up to the sky, but their attempts at love were only imitations of same until I discover what became of my own
That's Mae West and My Old Flame. This is Paul Burish. This is Tube Talk. This is WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. Welcome aboard, vintage radio enthusiast and good music lovers. You know, you can always drop us a line. It's tubetalk1@gmail.com. You can visit our site at tubetalkclassicradioshow.org. Hopefully you'll find it a little bit enlightening. And, you know, we're going to take a look in the mailbag this week because, you know, there's some mail in the bag. So let's take a look here. We got some emails last week concerning the music. Tom from New York State writes, I never knew that the Mills Brothers had started recording so early. I always thought of their later material, Cab Driver, Up the Lazy River, Glowworm, etc., as being when they really got going. Didn't know they were around since the early 30s. please play some more early stuff if you can. Well, you know what? On this show, we love to please, and that's an easy request to satisfy. So here we go with the Mills Brothers. Sweet Sue.
Every star above knows the one I love. Sweet Sue, Sweet Sue. And that moon up high knows the reason why. Sweet Sue, just you. No one else, it seems, ever shares my dreams. And without you, dear, I don't know what I do. In this heart of mine, you live all the time. Sweet Sue, Sweet Sue.
Sweet Sue, the Mills Brothers, John, Herb, Don, and Harry from 1932. I could listen to that stuff all night. And on to the mailbag. Another email inquiry. This is from Alan in Wincote, Pennsylvania. Alan asks, does anyone else work with you on Tube Talk? Well, you know, this is pretty much a shoestring operation, as they say, as hard as that may be to believe when you hear our finished product. We do have an associate in Chicago who has done up our website and has done some great advertising work and design for the show. Jimmy, don't know where we'd be on that count without you kids, so we're glad he's on board here. And I also do consider all my guest staff, so you know that expands my payroll considerably. We may have to refinance here at the show. So thanks for writing in. I love to hear from you. TubeTalk1@gmail.com. And, you know, I apologize if I mentioned this before, but I'm not certain if I have. And this does deserve some due if I repeated it. Well, you know, that's what it is. Radio has lost a great voice and a great guy. Those of you in the tri-state area may be particularly familiar with him. Stan Brooks from 1010 Winds has passed on. He was a presence for over 40 years and worked right up until a month before he died. You give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world. You know, Mayor Bloomberg named the radio reporters room in City Hall the Stan Brooks Radio Room. So that'll give you a little feel for just how significant he was on the radio media scene down in New York City. And when Westinghouse made 1010 go all news, Brooks was in on the ground floor. He'd covered stories like the Attica prison riot, the various Vietnam War protests, the botched Gravesend Brooklyn bank heist that would later become the inspiration for the film Dog Day Afternoon. And when Wins promoted him to senior correspondent, I find this utterly amazing, he took the promotion but not the raise, as he did not wish to make more than any of the other radio reporters. Simply amazing, but very typical. Stan Brooks, we miss you. Stan was 86. Whiteman and his orchestra, thank you very much, Mr. Whiteman. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest this evening is Dale Boyce from the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club. Dale has an extensive background in collecting and electronics. Give you a little bio here on him. In 2012, he retired from a 40-year career in electrical engineering and lighting design. He had designed electrical and power lighting systems for facilities such as museums, labs, hospitals, corporate offices, churches, correctional facilities. Yikes, Dale, it sounds like everything. And you did them in-state and out-of-states, traveled the country, and you went to college in Fargo, North Dakota with a BSEEE degree. And you bought a little AM-FM radio at a hardware store at the beginning of your freshman year. I hope it was a Zenith. And apparently, after college, you were receiving other radios when friends and relatives were disposing of them. I guess that was probably a symptom of that day. And in 1975, you got into antique radio collecting, 40 radios, speakers, tubes, parts. You found out about AWA. In the late 70s, you found out about Joe Pavic and the wonderful Wireless Museum in Minneapolis. Joined the Northland Antique Radio Club. And in 1995, you were a founder of the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club. Dale Boyce, welcome to Tube Talk. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Paul.
Hey, and you know, this is interesting here because what we hope to talk to Dale a little bit about tonight. Dale is a collector, but one of the neat things I liked about reading some of the stuff is the way he hunts. He is a hunter and a seeker. And it is interesting, every state has a little bit of radio history in it. And, you know, frequently we focus on the big cities like Chicago that had an awful lot of companies in there, or New York. And, you know, even up here in Massachusetts, we're really not known for radio companies, but we have a few little things going on up here in history. Automatic radio was up here, and Sprague Condenser was here. Aerovox is still here, though they're owned by a different outfit now. Hytron Tubes was up in Danvers, Mass. So I even believe Bosch had a plant out near Springfield for a little while, and they manufactured sets here. Pilot Radio had a facility here as well up in Lawrence. National Radio was over in Malden, Mass. So every state has a story, and Dale has been hunting for things that come from Wisconsin. And who would think that up in Wisconsin, where it's been so awfully cold, that there was a radio business, radio manufacturers, radio companies. And Dale, maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you were hunting for a Briggs & Stratton Company crystal radio set for the longest time. And we might know Briggs & Stratton from small motors and lawnmowers. But maybe you can tell me a little bit about what turned you on and what made you want to have this great quest for a Briggs & Stratton crystal radio set.
Well, Paul, I moved to Milwaukee in 1982 and discovered in a magazine, an old radio magazine, that Briggs & Stratton had made some earphones back in the mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had acquired several sets of earphones, but I did not have a set of Briggs & Stratton earphones, so I kind of put that in the back burner saying, I'll be on the lookout for one of those.
Someday.
And I looked for several years, and the ones I did come across were not for sale. I finally did end up with a pair of Briggs & Stratton earphones. And doing some other research, I ran across an ad in QST magazine from 1922. It was a full-page ad by Briggs & Stratton of many radio pieces of equipment they made. Earphones and transformers and resistors and capacitors and termination knobs and a complete crystal radio. I was dumbfounded by that. So I set out talking to the people like Joe Pavick at his museum and Dr. Ralph Mucko in Illinois at his museum and other people from out east, from AWA, serious collectors. And nobody had ever seen or heard of a Briggs & Stratton crystal radio. That quest went on for about 25 to 30 years.
Yikes, that's a big one. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, you got the whole gang looking for it. And one of the things I liked about your research was, you know, you're hunting around and you're looking in some of these periodicals of the day. Some of the packages here, you had a picture of a box in your article here, a Basco headphone box. And I just love the graphics, you know, it just typifies that whole era, you know, the lettering, the picture, the design, and even some of the other advertisements that you had found as you were hunting around here. Just the it just sort of reeks of a nice nostalgic feel, and it's a great way to learn about what was going on in the radio world. Sometimes I have the most fun looking through these old periodicals, not so much with the big company ads, but with some of the jobbers and the secondhand guys who were selling cabinets and tubes and parts and aerials and all that kind of stuff. So you located some headphones, and what's the next step in the progression here as far as tracking down this set?
Well, I put ads out in several of the clubs which I'm a member of, the Minneapolis, the Northland Club, the Wisconsin Club, Illinois, Antique Radio Classified, international publication.
Oh, yeah.
The Oklahoma Vintage Radio Club, which I'm a member of. And I got an email one night in 2010 from a guy in Iowa who said, I saw your ad in the Northland radio site, and I found one of those radios, and I put it on eBay. Good luck. It wasn't first dibs or anything. So That was a long 10 days, let me tell you. I was anxious, checking the eBay site frequently, and I enlisted the help of an expert in the bidding wars, and at the end of 10 days, I was able to have a successful bid. And then a few days later, after the money had changed hands, the radio arrived, and I've been on cloud nine ever since.
Well, you know, it's always interesting, and you know, you're hoping when, you know, any eBay sale, especially now when somebody's buying something, especially if it's delicate, you never know, you know, exactly how it's going to arrive, and you know, you must have been on pins and needles here. Now, one of the other things that you enlisted here for some assistance, in addition to these some of these fellows you were talking to who were fellow collectors, is you had chatted with the people at Briggs & Stratton. And, you know, what a lot of people overlook, and I wasn't even aware of until I found out that they had one, is many companies who had a connection in the radio business or in some type of electronics business, if they've survived, in many cases they have archives, or whether it's formal or informal, somebody who serves to keep the history of the company. And you had actually had some conversations with people at Briggs & Stratton who gave you a little information on this, didn't you?
Yes, that goes back to 1989 when I made my first contact with them, and I was referred to an archivist, and the guy knew about the radio. They had just published their first history of the company, a 75-year history, and the radio, one of those crystal radios was pictured in this publication. He showed me the original blueprint, not a blueprint, a vellum, the original manufacturing drawing for this crystal radio and all the components, complete
wow.
parts list. And he said that, yeah, he said, we made everything here. Even the nuts and bolts and screws were all turned out of stock, and the wood cabinet and the little glass tubes were cut and finished there. Then it turns out that over the years, those drawings got filed away, and they got out of the radio business. And present times came, and they had all these old archival drawings digitized. But something happened to the index for the drawings.
Oops.
So the index is gone.
Oh, well. At least they saved something.
Well,
you know, it's fascinating, and it's great that they cared enough to save that stuff, too, because obviously they've gone on to other things, and, you know, who would have thunk it? All up in Wisconsin, Briggs & Stratton, turning out a crystal radio. And, you know, you mentioned it. You just made mention of it, and on the surface of it, I guess we could gloss over this point and just kind of go on. But I was taken aback a little bit, and I had to sit and I thought about this a little bit when I was reading through your article on this. When you were chatting with the folks from Briggs & Stratton, they made absolutely everything that went into it, even the screws. And you think about today and how somebody would source, you know, a modern piece of electronics, you know, the likelihood that you might have two or three things from the same country sometimes, you know, everything just comes from the Far East these days. But just the fact that even the screws themselves, they manufactured, talk about a homegrown item. And did anybody have a feel for how these things performed, you know, back then? Was it something that was it a pretty good one, considering what its radio peers were in the crystal radio world?
Well, they claimed it was a good performing radio. When I look at the construction of it, it's really simple. It's not as finely constructed as some other crystal radios are, but it's a crystal radio. Antenna and ground and earphones, and their earphones were the top of the line. They said there's a 1/10,000th of an inch on the diaphragm, and the earphones was their standard, and they put their earphones up against anyone. So
that's interesting, very interesting. And apparently they even made things for other manufacturers. I saw a little ad copy that you would include it in your story there. It looks like they had made some stuff for Montgomery Ward's. They have an Airline Junior crystal receiver here, all for the bargain price of $7.40. So, you know, it's interesting because sometimes when you have a manufacturer who's a little bit on the fringes of the mainstream, you wouldn't think they were making things for other companies. But I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, there's ads in the article that I wrote for the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club that state that Briggs & Stratton was offering their factory to any radio manufacturer for manufacture of radio equipment in part or complete. That was in 1922.
So. And, you know, the other thing that's very striking is, given their reputation, I mean, anybody who's familiar, you know, with a lawnmower or has a snowblower, and obviously snowblower is something near and dear to a lot of hearts this winter, you know, the Briggs & Stratton engine has such an incredible reputation. You know, you just can't kill the things. And, you know, one comes to mind in particular. I have an old hardware store. It's nothing fancy, you know, gas-powered lawnmower, but it has a Briggs & Stratton engine on it. And I have to tell you, it's going on 20-something years now, and I had somebody who's pretty good with motors give it a real good going over once, and they gave me that thing back, and it was as good as it was on day one with such a reputation for quality, and not only with a reputation of it, but actually proven performance. No wonder the company managed to survive so long, and it's just great that they saved a little bit of their history. I've often been interested with, I believe Raytheon up here maintained some type of archivists or historical library in their facility, and I've often wondered if I could only find the right person to chat with up there. I'm sure they would have some great stories too. It's such a part of radio history to have a connection beyond the tube world and into crystal. And from what you were telling me, Dale, you have collected items that go back into the, what was it, the 1850s. You have all types of items and ephemera that go back to the very, very early days of radio, huh?
Radio and other electrical devices and instruments. I've got some medical quackery.
Yes, I noticed that. That piqued my interest. Maybe you could give our audience an example of a quack device. I would love to hear about one. I'm sure they had some crazy things that they thought would get great results. Anything in particular come to mind?
Well, the typical quack device had a battery in it and some coils and some contacts, and they would hook up the patient. And like if your head was aching, they might take the scalp massage probe and run it over your head and give you some little static shocks. And they had other probes for dealing with other aches and pains. And there was a lot of patent medicine out there. And anybody that could make a coil and a few contacts could
could claim to be a doctor. It reminds me of some of those things you'd see in the old Three Stooges. You know, they say, oh, just hook them up to this and let it gyrate around for 20 minutes. You lose 20 pounds. So, but no, that was particularly interesting. What else is in your Wayback collection, really old items that you have that might be interesting?
Well, I've got some telegraph equipment from the 1880s, 1890s. I have spark gap equipment from the teens, the kind of equipment that would have been seen on the Titanic and other ocean going ships when they sent the Morse code back and forth, and loop antennas and some early tubes for transmitting and broadcasting. Some of those we got a couple from the station WHA in Madison, which was on the air in 1917, and the physics department on the same floor was making tubes, and their challenge was to keep the radio station supplied with tubes. A guy by the name of Randall Davidson has written up the history of that radio station. It's a Wisconsin public radio station, so...
No, it is interesting. It's, you know, it's all part and parcel of you know, radio before it was the big commercial business, and people went, you know, as a consumer to a store. It was always a little bit of that, you know, in the 20s it was maybe a little less so, but when you go back a little further, it was still very much science and experimentation, and it was very impressive to people. It was really out there on the cutting edge, and all of this stuff speaks to, you know, the great inventiveness of some of these early folks. Now, one of the other things I had saw here, there was a Briggs & Stratton automatic power maker or battery, and it claimed to replaces A batteries. And again, it looks like another Briggs & Stratton device connected to radio. Was that something they made quite a few of, or was that just something that they ran for a couple of years?
I think they made quite a few of them. They advertised extensively in their local papers and in some other publications. They were one of many companies that were making battery eliminators. This was at a time when your dry cell batteries and the wet cell batteries would run out of power, and the radios got more elaborate and needed more power. So the battery eliminators, some rectifiers, some using the wet cell, any kind of technology they could come up with.
Yeah. So at the time they'd be competing with companies like early Philco, which was Philadelphia Battery and Storage. Before then,
Philco had theirs, Atwater, Kent, Crosley, Zenith. All of the major manufacturers had their own line of battery illuminators. They gave them different catchy names, but 1927 was sort of the peak of that, because in 1927 is when AC power came to a good portion of the country. And then they could plug in your battery illuminator. You could run your battery-type radio off of AC current, off of your house current. And then when you could afford to, you could upgrade to an actual AC radio.
But it
gave extended life to the old battery radios.
And thus Philco was born, when they decided that, hey, look, this is our battery business and it's going the way of the buffalo. We better start making something that's going to be around for a little bit. So, on that timeline, that was all, pretty significant development. Let's just hit the pause button here for a moment, Dale, and remind everyone this is Tube Talk on WRCA Radio. We are here every Friday night. Our guest this week is Dale Boyce from the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club, and we're talking about Wisconsin and radio. Now, just out of curiosity, because I know many people do not equate Wisconsin with the world of radio on the surface. There were several other companies, though, that were up there and were connected in one way or the other to making either parts or radio equipment. What were some of the other names of outfits that were up in Wisconsin?
Well, Allen Bradley is a significant company that was making radio parts and amplifiers.
Yep, that does sound familiar, yep.
Allen Bradley is now Rockwell Corporation.
Oh, excellent.
Rockwell Internet. They're still around today, and their equipment shows up from time to time. I'm not sure what the status is of their archive right now. I haven't checked on that for a couple of years. Globe Electric was a very prolific.
And you did a very other interesting article. That might be a subject for another night here. We'll have to pursue Globe, but they were in the radio business, and they produced things that may be a little bit more familiar to some of the collectors that tune into this show. And who else was up there? Anybody else we might be familiar with?
Well, Central Radio Laboratories, Empire Electric, one of the Plymouth radio companies, Sunlight, Webster, Wells, Western Coil and Electric Company was very prolific in radio. WK Electric out of Kenosha made a lot of different radios. Those are some that come to mind right offhand there.
So it wasn't just beer that made Milwaukee famous, is what it sounds like. There's a lot more up there than Pabst, huh?
Yeah.
I love some of these little ads you included in your article, too. I love the lingo from those days. At last, high-efficiency receivers at a down-to-earth quick sale price. Basco radio receivers. Hear more and cost less. You know, the ad men were at it then just as they are now. And, I just love this stroll down memory lane looking at some of these advertisements as well. Now, we've certainly talked about Briggs & Stratton and some of the other companies that were up in Wisconsin that the casual collector may not have been aware of. Maybe you could tell us a little bit, Dale, about founding the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club with Greg Hunolt, who I know is familiar to some people in the audience, and just in general, how did you guys decide it was time in Wisconsin to have your own club?
Well, back in 1996, in August, A few of us from Wisconsin got together one evening during the Radio Fest radio conference in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Got together at a local restaurant, and we said, you know, it's time to do a Wisconsin Club. And so we put together a flyer, and in October of 1996, we had our first informal swap meet in the parking lot of one of the guys that was in the group. And then it developed, and volume one, number one of our newsletter came out in 1997. We had our second official swap meet in June 1st of 97, and it's been happening ever since. So,
about how many members? Any feel for how big is your membership these days?
I think we're about 65 members right now.
Very good. Very good. You know, it was
from several states. So.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that we chatted briefly about is that you know, there's a lot of people who belong to a lot of clubs. They may not live there, but I was noticing, and he may be listening tonight or not, one of your newer members, I think it might have been in the July 2013 newsletter from the club, Greg Van Beek, who has his own program on the air up at, I believe, 1420 The Breeze. It's on Saturdays, a nostalgia-driven program, and he had recently joined the club, so... there was a couple of other folks that had joined, so it seems like your membership is being added to, and that's a good thing in these days. And it was interesting. Not to hop all over the board here, but I made a note, and I forgot to mention this because this is kind of near and dear to my heart. You're a collector of Ready Kilowatt items. Who is Ready Kilowatt, for those who might not know? I'm keenly familiar with Ready Kilowatt. He's one of my favorites. Who was Ready Kilowatt?
Ready Kilowatt was the guy that promoted electricity. Electricity is penny cheap, and Ready Kilowatt was the icon for everything electric. And
it was very cool as well. My dad worked for the reason I know of him. My dad worked for Edison, Boston Edison, down here for many, many, many years. And Ready Kilowatt showed up on newsletters and company memos and union handouts, and I, as a little kid, I was always kind of fascinated with him. Who's he? Is he a lightning bolt? What is he? You know, it's just one of those things. It was interesting, you know, how companies tried to take advantage of a character, and they used him for some educational, some advertising, but it was interesting to have a personification for an electric company other than just, somebody who calls you up from the billing department. That's what most of us think of today when I think of the electric light company. Anything else about Briggs & Stratton or a Wisconsin radio company that the audience might find unusual or particularly informative, something that the casual observer might not think of? We'll leave it at this. We'll wrap it here. But I just thought if there's something we should know about Wisconsin, we don't always often get up there, please share it with us.
Okay. I do have to put a plug in for one of the resources through some other radio contacts, I was able to talk with Maurice Sievers. He is the author of the Crystal Clear, Volumes 1 and 2. It's really an encyclopedia of crystal radios.
Very interesting. Fascinating.
He put together. And there's a couple of one-line references to the Briggs & Stratton article in there, or the Briggs & Stratton equipment, but when I spoke with him, I asked him if he could elaborate on that. He said, well, his notes indicated that the information came from a catalog. So I asked him, well, what catalog did that come from? Was that in a electrical jobber's catalog or something? And he got back to me and he said, no, it was the Briggs & Stratton radio equipment catalog. So I was able to obtain from Maurice, who was in his 90s, copy of this Briggs & Stratton electric radio equipment catalog from 1922.
Oh, that's neat.
And included a couple of pages from that in the article, and that's really the kernel that the nugget that the article was rewritten around. We were all set to go to press, and then I got a hold of this catalog, and I said, Greg, stop the presses. I've got to do a rewrite here.
Well, you know, you never know when you get some more information, and it's great that you could find somebody who was still on top of his game and could produce something like that for you, and you know, when he was still in his 90s. That's super. That's the icing on the cake. Dale Boyce, Wisconsin Antique Radio Club, you are truly a testament to the perseverance of the radio collector. Thanks very much for sharing your stories about Briggs & Stratton, the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club, and radio in general in Wisconsin. It's been great having you on. Maybe we'll have you back and we'll spend a little time on Globe Radio. I'm sure the audience would love it.
I'd love to. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Dale, and have a great night. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
It don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing. It don't mean a thing. All you do is start to sing. Makes no difference if it's sweet or hard. You've got that rhythm, give it everything you got. Oh, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing. Oh, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing. Oh, it don't mean a thing. All you do is start to sing. Oh, it makes no difference if it's sweet or hard. You've got that rhythm, give it everything you've got. Oh, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing.
Brothers, and thank you, Dale Boyce. Thanks so very much for joining us here on Tube Talk. Thanks for sharing your insights into the world of Wisconsin and its connection to the world of radio that we all love. A true radio investigator as well as a collector and a nice writer, too, puts out a lot of great articles. Hopefully we can have him back on some other night. Thanks again for your time. And now a word from our sponsor.
Beans times two beans is four beans.
Nescafe uses lots more beans.
10 beans times 4 beans and add 3 more beans. Make 43 rich coffee beans.
Yes, you get 43 beans in every cup of Nescafe real coffee beans. That's all there is in Nescafe. 43 beans in every cup. Make Nescafe the all coffee instant coffee. With the left
extra bean means extra flavor. Today's Nescafe goes all the way for flavor with 43 choice beans in every cup.
What's happening to you these days? Having lots of fun? Believe me, I know some folks that are in for some fun. Those early bird friends of Annie's, who've already sent for their new 1940 model Orphan Annie shake-up mug. You know, all of Annie's friends who drink sweet chocolate-flavored Ovaltine can get these swell new shake-up mugs free. And boy, are they beauties. Wait till you see them. They're made of genuine beetleware in brand new colors. A beautiful deep green and a bright flashing scarlet. And every mug has a big colored picture of Orphan Annie and her dog Sandy right on the front. And don't forget, this shaker upper is a 2-in-1 gift. When you put the top on, it makes the keen shaker for mixing your ice cold chocolate flavored Ovaltine shake-up. And then, when you take the bright red top off, presto, the shaker turns into a swell big drinking mug. holding a creamy, bubbly shake-up all ready for you to drink. Man alive, what fun you'll have with that new shaker-upper. Playing the shake-up game with your friends and having shake-up parties, making a picnic out of every meal this summer. Think of having a delicious ice-cold shake-up drink anytime you want it, made with fresh cold milk and sweet chocolate-flavored Ovaltine. What a treat on a warm summer day. And, of course, Mother will be glad to have you fix all the shake-ups you want, because she knows how much extra pep and energy food there is in every single Ovaltine shake-up. Loads of extra vitamins and minerals and other things everybody needs to be healthy and husky the way we all want to be. So, here's the thing. Annie wants all her friends to have one of these swell new 1940 model shake-up mugs, and you want to get one, I know. Especially when Annie has fixed it so fellows and girls who drink Ovaltine can get one absolutely free. Even though our regular price is 50 cents. So, listen closely. Here's what to do. Sit right down after tonight's adventure and print your name and address plainly on a piece of paper. Send it in, along with a thin metal foil seal from under the lid of a can of sweet chocolate-flavored Ovaltine. Mail it to Orphan Annie, Chicago, Illinois, and she'll send you your new 1940 model shake-up mug absolutely free. Now, don't put it off, will you? Ask Mother to get you a can of sweet chocolate-flavored Ovaltine right now and send in that seal for your free shake-up mug tonight. Mail it to Orphan Annie, Chicago, Illinois. Any story, but she can offer this wonderful free shake-up mug only to her friends who live in the United States. But if you do live in the United States, send in tonight.
What's in your little Orphan Annie shake-up mug tonight? It's delicious. If Mother only knew what Uncle Polly had in his mug, she might not be too happy. Ladies and gentlemen, as we head off into the sunset here tonight, thanks awful much for listening. I'm going to have a little Patsy Cline coming up here. And we'd just like to remind you all, you do not need to settle for that thin, bland gruel of so-called music that the giant media elite wishes to feed you. Sit down at the Tube Talk table for a steak and baked potato sound, gourmet music for the connoisseur, singers who climb the scale and musicians who skillfully play their instruments, fascinating guests. It's all here for you. Yes, it's Tube Talk on WRCA.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love letters in the sand. How you laugh when I take our love letters from the sand. You made a vow that you would always be true, but somehow that vow meant nothing. Now my poor heart just aches with every wave that breaks over love letters in the sand. You made a vow that you would always be true, but some
Well, you know, it just wasn't Pat Boone writing those love letters in the sand. That's Patsy Cline from 1963. Thank you all for listening to Tube Talk. We are so happy and so proud and so pleased with our loyal audience each and every week. Thanks again for tuning in. Good night, gang.
One of these days, Alice, pow, right in the kisser.
I'm on alone. life a shadow does seem, and my joy a fleeting dream, a fleeting dream. None so rare, none so fair, here in my poor heart, none to compare. Heart of mine. Martha, Martha, I implore thee, leave me not to deep and dark despair. Never leave me, nor deceive me. Come and share thy boon with me. Oh, come and share thy boon me. Martha, Martha, I implore thee to